This is a HeadGum Podcast.
What's up, shitheads? Welcome back to another episode of High and Mighty. It's me, your boy, the number one fuckboy, Johnny G, standing 6'2", 304 pounds, from the South Shore of Nassau County, Long Island. It's John Gabris. All you gotta do is trust me. Jackson, Maine, from A Star Is Born. Abortion is healthcare. Okay, trying to stay topical. I like that. I'm the one who put you in the intro and can't get rid of you. Who abandoned Snoopy in the vestibule? Well, I don't have a Leonard. I don't have a Leonard Bernstein impression. So please leave, Lenny. Also joining me in the High Mighty Studio is my nearly sound co-host, Arthur Gabris. Arthur, give him a shout out. Arthur, currently sitting next to my wife, who's got some light food poisoning. Also joining me in the High Mighty Studios, you know you love her. It's Alice Wendland.
Yay!
Holy shit, she brings her own Foley board.
For the listeners, there's an applause. It's not going to get recorded on my track or yours. It's just a weird
That's just for us.
What's up? Do you do a weigh-in in your intro every time?
Yeah, and it hasn't moved down. It's only gone up. Yeah, it's pretty much all over the place. And I record out of order and well in advance. So listeners are sometimes like, did you gain 14 pounds overnight? I'm like, no, these are 7 weeks apart. It just happens to be I'm sitting on the Alice interview until it's good and juicy.
Okay, yeah, when it's topical, finally.
Until she's in the news for being canceled, then I'll release it. Like, she's actually been on my podcast.
Well, that would be really special for me. I've been trying to get canceled, as you know.
This is the place to do it.
I would like a Netflix special.
Oh, hell yeah.
So that would be amazing.
Wouldn't we all? Alice, this has been, this is a pleasure. I'm so glad you were able to do this.
Thank you for having me. Is that it? We're done?
Yeah, I think I got everything. You did the applause part, right? That none of the listeners heard. Yeah. Okay. So then we're ready to go.
Yeah. I was happy to find out you had a podcast and I wanted to do it. And then it was High and Mighty. So I was like, oh no, do I have to get high? Cause I don't smoke pot.
Well, you don't have to. You don't have to do anything you don't want to do.
First time for everything.
Welcome to Hollywood. You don't have to do anything you don't want to do. Untrue. No, it is. That was like the loose. It's more about that. That's the attitude behind the podcast and people. Well, I just liked the pun of those two words as being a stoner who is large and also annoyingly opinionated.
And so mighty.
Yeah.
I think of you as mighty. You're definitely a mighty presence on the stage.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're
I'm a mighty presence in a doorway as well. I'm a mighty presence in a middle seat. on the plane. Oh, I just had a middle seat both ways to South By. I turned to both people. I was like, I'm sorry, but this is how wide my thighs are. You'll see.
Honestly,
I'm not manspreading.
If I saw you in a middle seat on a plane and I was walking by, I would say to your companions, I'd say, congrats. You're about to have a fun flight. He does this for a living. And you're about to get it for free.
I had a middle flight on Southwest to South by Southwest one time, and Drew Tarver was like in the row. He was like, "You know, hey," as he walked past, he just went, "Hey, I'll take that. You get up." Like he just saw that I was like, and the people next to me were so like upset. He was like, "I'll just fucking get in there. Don't worry. He's a king."
Oh, Drew Tarver. Does he have a podcast? I'm gonna do it right now.
I think Big Grande probably puts out a bunch of podcasts called Teacher's Lounge, I believe. Yeah. Everyone's
go
got a podcast. Wetterland.
I'm going to hop over to their podcast real quick if you don't
mind. Pop in over. They're recording here also in my apartment. So if you want to say
you could. That would be a cool hacker trade if you could just Zoom bomb into somebody's podcast.
And plug Resident Alien finale. Gotta go,
bud. Resident Alien finale coming out live. And they're like, who is, you know, but I have to be masturbating also to do it.
The applause is going. Is this chatterbait?
I'm four conversations behind, but I was going to say, I don't smoke pot. I'm sober and I've been sober for 8 years. Wrong thing.
That's my sponsor calling. Congrats, by the way. That's awesome. That's a difficult and powerful choice.
I found that it was easy. I'm just kidding. anyone
I don't know what everyone else is having a hard time.
If anyone's listening having a hard time, it's because you're something's wrong with you.
Yeah, it's internal. It's not the process.
I found it's because I'm a good person that I can do it.
Oh, shit. But,
so I am so happy that I don't have to do the pot thing anymore, because I would always do any drug that was offered. And like, weed was the worst for me. The most, like, the typical story the first time was like really fun. I was like, this is great. Never again after that. Every time after, it was always like all it did was heighten my anxiety to the level of like, I basically, the only thing that is going to make me okay is if I exercise really hard or clean, like total meth reaction. And yeah, everyone else is just kind of sleepy feeling. I'm like, oh, you're not, every time you say a word, you're not second guessing that word and then second guessing your second guessing of it within like milliseconds.
Alice took a bong rip and now she's taping tinfoil over all our windows. I think it might have been a sativa.
And I'm trying to do it in a way where it seems like I'm having a good time because I don't want to bum anyone else out. So I'm like, what if I did this?
Would this be? I got all this extra aluminum foil. Let's let it rip. Come on, man. What the fuck?
And then I'm like thinking about the aluminum foil shortage also in the back. It's like the worst, worst. But I would always do it.
I've been pretty heavy into pot now for about 15-ish years. And I know a lot of, I have a lot of potheads in my life. And I have a lot of ex-potheads in my life who just at some point, pot just started giving them anxiety. And it never did leading up until that moment. Like, I know daily heavy smokers that are randomly in their early 30s were like, well, I don't think I could do this anymore. Like, and I was like, whoa, what happened? These are some of my old smoking buddies. And they're like, don't know. But every time I do it, my heart races and I'm terrified. I'm like, you might have anxiety.
Well, that's what happened for me, but it happened like immediately when I first started, but then I just kept doing it for 20 years because I was like always chasing that first time. One moment of fun and you'd be like, that is a funny and then the rest of it's just like,
oh man, I didn't even watch any of Dune 2. My relationship with alcohol is kind of like that. I partied from like the ages of like 13 to 30. Like everything was always fun. I mean, granted, I was a mess and, you know, got hurt and did a lot, all the classic like party. And then at like 31, I was like, man, I've had diarrhea for 2 decades. I don't sleep well. I am overweight and everything hurts all the time. And then it wasn't until literally the pandemic when I was like, what if I took like a couple of months off drinking? And I was like, oh, this is my problem. This is really hamstringing me. So now I am in this weird relationship where I'm like, well, tonight I'm going to have a few beers and deal with it for 5 days.
It's like, yeah, it's like you developed an allergy.
Yeah, and that's truly how it feels. And I'm also like, it also feels like the first time, like, you know, you're like sitting on your couch over and over again. And then one, like 10 years in, you go, man, this little part of the pillow that bothers me. What if I flip the pillow? And you flip the pillow and sit back down. You're like, wow, I can't believe I didn't do that 10 years ago. That's how I feel about alcohol. I'm like, oh, man, I feel so much better. And it's like, yeah, you could have had this happen to you at any point in life. Like, you could have had this earlier.
Yeah, but we don't live in a culture that, like, we're just now getting to the point where people are like, what if no drinking?
Yeah, and also we're also getting to the point where people who do drink go like, I find it okay that you don't drink. For the longest time, the idea of like a friend of yours being sober around you while you were getting wasted was like, started to be like this weird reflection of me where I'm like, why the fuck aren't you, you're just painting, you're writing down everything stupid I say, you hate me. It's like, whoa. And now being in Los Angeles,
like,
and in my 40s,
investigative journalist of our friendship,
you're gonna rat me out, aren't you, Ronan Farrow?
You're taking fucking notes.
Yeah, I married my stepdaughter. What the fuck is your problem, Ronan?
Why are we friends again? How do we meet?
Why are you here? Oh, you're John Lovett's partner? Oh, okay.
They broke up.
Oh, bummer. That's like, I know. I don't know anything about either.
I know.
Alice, our paths have crossed again in recent years. We started out together as Code Fam way back in the day. Outliers in the idea of the Code family. And then here we are again.
I know, passing ships, you and I, because like everyone else was sort of like nouveau influencers besides Nicole. Like everyone was like, there wasn't a ton of UCB people in the, it was just like you, me and Nicole. And then everybody else was like influencers,
New York stand-ups
influencers
or influencers
existed. Yeah. It was really like, weird because like there wasn't a internet to influence at that point. It was not the same. No. And but then you had your Carly Aquilinos and like those people and Awkwafina became a viral sensation.
Well, there's so many of those. Like Pete Davidson was on Guy Code. You know, Andrew Schultz was on Guy Code. Duval, yeah. Charlemagne, like all these people who have blown up enormous. And then there's Johnny G, year 8 of his podcast, Living Large.
Alice W, Living the City, Patreon only, we got 200 subscribers, you know?
Rock and roll, influencing one corpse at a time, let him rip.
And but I love it.
And then again, our paths crossed recently doing improv together for the first time in our lives at Culo Gato as people who can both improvise and speak remedial Spanish. You are a much stronger speaker than I am.
And
you are
a much better improviser than me. So it's we meet in the middle.
We meet in the middle of perfect. Dos gringos. See.
So I'm like notoriously in my own brain very bad at improv. Like I've had experiences where I've done improv for years. Like I was in the whole class system in UCB. Class system. Cast
system.
New York. I took classes here. I don't know if I... Maybe I did take classes here. I took some advanced classes when I first got to LA. And I think I tried out for Harold once. But then I just did like indie team stuff for a little while. And it was great, you know, but then... I just kind of chose stand-up at a certain point, but
strong
I still have
choice.
Done it.
Smart choice, yeah.
Well, like, I really love, this is what I always say, like, I love just not having to rely on other people and their schedules. Like,
no, it's a dream. It's like the main reason to want to get into stand-up as a longtime improviser is just to not need four people and to not split money.
And you can still do improv. You don't have to write anything ahead of time. A lot of people don't, you know, just do that. Like, just do Rory Scovel's act and you're basically it.
I know. He's an inspiration over here.
So, but when I do improv, like I have had amazing times doing improv before, but I remember this one, I did one set one time with Brian Husky and he had a team at UCB before it closed down for the pandemic and they would do a show, like a monthly show. And they invited me one time because I've been friends with Brian for a long time. We were on People of Earth together and I was like, this will be great. I'm among friends, not a big deal. And I just bombed, like I somehow bombed their show. Like they were like trying their best to, and I just kept walking in and like energy vampiring everything. And I was like, I don't know what the fuck is going on. Like I've had sets like that before, you know, and it's just like lack of experience and whatever.
Therein lies the superpower of improv though. It's like bombing in a group is way more powerful and fun than bombing alone. As someone who's bombed in almost every situation imaginable, improv bombing is fun because you could walk off with five people and go, holy shit. But bombing alone, someone just like gives you the whole like teeth emoji as you walk into the green room and they're like,
I was bombing alone in this show. Like I was walking into scenes doing something so off. Doing the like, no, you don't, Oprah, for every single thing that was established. I don't know how I did it. And like the audience was going, when I would say something. And then the other people on stage were like desperately like, let's work with this, you know, and they're trying to weave it in. But I was just throwing them. It was just so insane. Anyway, but so I figured out that like I can do improv if I'm not speaking English. Because I'm so focused on trying to understand what's happening in general.
It gets you out of your head because you're in your head linguistically. You're out of your head like artistically.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this is the trick. This is what I needed. So I can now say I'm pretty good.
The last few times I've done the Spanglish ASCAT, I've felt... gave me flashbacks to like early... You know, I've been doing improv now for over 20 years. Ugh. And it makes me...
Old man improv.
I literally said to someone the other day, they're like, how long have you been playing? Have you ever played Dungeons and Dragons? And I was like, I hate that I have to say this to you because it sounds so old man, but I literally have been, what year were you born? And the girl was like, oh, I was born in 1998 or whatever. I'm like, I literally have been playing since before you were born. Like, I hate to be that guy, but I have been playing since 1994. And they're like, really? And I'm like, it's just a matter of not quitting. It does, like, it's not even like impressive to have done improv for 20, I'm not even including my college improv team. I've been on a UCB team for 21 plus years. It's fucking disgusting.
That's so great. You should be way more successful.
No, I know. That's the thing. Well, honestly, that's talk about putting your fucking eggs in a basket. But doing the Spanish language improv is the most free I feel because I'm nervous and I haven't been nervous stepping into an improv show in forever. So it activates that. And then, like, listening is a fundamental part of improv that, of course, I understand, but it's something you could do passively, but not if it's not your native tongue being spoken on stage. Then you need to be, it's like the hardest I've ever listened. I'm like looking at everyone's mouth, like whipping back and forth with everyone being like, wait, what does como mean? Oh, wait, what the fuck? Okay, yeah.
Grasping, all right.
Yeah. And then it's like, sort of like, I just have to enter this scene. And I'm like using vast improv, quote unquote, vast improv experience to understand contextually what's happening and then trying to inject my childlike understanding of the Spanish language.
My favorite thing about doing this show with you, having done it two times, is that you have twice initiated scenes. You're so in it and you're so like the Spanish aspect of it has like infiltrated and incepted you so hard that someone will initiate a scene in English during this Spanglish show. And Gabrus will walk into the scene fully speaking only Spanish, like the only one doing it. And provided a game for one of the scenes where I was like, hey, why do you keep talking Spanish to our son?
Well, I'm here. I better get my fucking lessons in. Yeah.
You didn't notice. You fully were unaware that you were just speaking Spanish. English scene. It was incredible.
It's such a fucking like feat for me that I enjoy doing it so much. I never feel more fulfilled after a show, even like a mediocre show. Afterwards, I'm like, I didn't even know what you guys were talking about for like two full scenes. So like, I can't really complain.
Yeah. So we were going to talk about a topic. Now, I know it's not my job to bring it up,
but it is in a way.
It is.
Why not? Why not? Women can do this job too.
as long as I'm not trying to be president, it's just like when you said I had to pick a topic, I was under so much that talk about pressure. I was like, I'm racking my brain because I hate getting penned in. And I think that's the other thing about improv that really stresses me out is that like committing to something. In stand-up, you drive the entire ship. You know, if you want to bail on a bit, there's like 8 million ways to get out of a bit. Right. And you can make it funny if you're experienced enough. Like, it's
funny,
easy.
I feel the opposite. I feel that improv stand-up pens me in because I'm like, shit, I have to like do those jokes again, but better the next time I go up. And then when you go up the next time, you're like, ugh, I'm beholden to like to my material. And I'm trying to eliminate because that's just me having an old farty idea of what stand-up is. So I'm trying to like eliminate. I mean, it is what it is, but like now it's a little more open than that, what stand-up can be. And so like I need to get my head out of my ass, but I feel that way. So I did not intend to pen you in with the premise of my podcast that you came on.
I don't think picking a topic is actually like really. I didn't think you're like, well, this is gonna stress her out. Like,
I definitely did not
believe that's what you were doing. But I'm just saying that's how my brain works. I'm just like so like I don't want to because if we pick something and then it's not good, it doesn't kill. But it's gonna be on me. Like what?
Oh, that's why I do it. That's why when someone goes, that episode sucked, I'm like, well, Alice picked fashion for non-fashion people.
I see. That's how. Okay. And it's a fail.
And I didn't even want to talk about that.
That's smart.
I want to talk about blue light glasses, but she insisted that we don't.
That's smart podcasting.
Yeah.
But and that's what, yeah.
Ready to throw. It's the antithesis of improv. Ready to throw my partner underneath the fucking bus.
And you need a space to be able to do that if you do improv a lot. You need a place where you can really throw other people under the bus.
Well, podcasting is definitely that.
That was the other thing I loved about about stand-up is when I was doing stand-up in New York versus improv in New York, like I was doing improv at a low level, like with other students. So there's a lot of people doing improv that are theater people, a lot of theater people in New York. And people are coming in doing improv to either like get, you know, better at theater or what have you. And, or they're rich kids, and mm-hmm. which is like two different kinds of obnoxious. And like, there was this whole vibe of like, got your back. We're a family. This theater camp thing going on. And I was like, this is not true. Like I don't, that was when I took Curtis Gwynn's class for 201, which honestly, the only reason I stayed in improv was because of Curtis Gwynn, because when I went from 101 to 201, I already was noticing that vibe and going like, this does not speak to me. Cause I had tried acting when I was in high school and like in eighth grade, like I loved acting, but I fucking hated everyone in theater so much.
Oh, Alice, you are touching on something that is...
I bailed.
Almost every single thing I really enjoy in life is ruined by the other people who like it. Like movies, comic books, and men always, like improv, like all these worlds that I really like. Podcasting, there's always just the people who are fans of it or the people who do it often irk me. And it's like I was into comic books for a long time, Star Wars, Marvel, like all these things.
Yeah.
I'm just like, oh no. Like everything I'm really into martial arts, and like that is a real weird vibe. You know what I mean? Like like the straight out.
Oh my God.
Yeah, you are talking to a 42-year-old childless man. You know, so you're gonna find out some weird hobbies that Uncle Gabrus has. AG1, what's up? I'm here to talk to you about AG1 Athletic Greens again. You know, it's important to me that the supplements I take are high quality, and that's why I've been taking AG1 for, what is it now, 4 years, 3.5 years or something like that? The thing I like about it is it's researched and developed by an in-house team of scientists, doctors, and nutritionists with decades of experience in their fields, so you know it ain't BS, it's AG. Like they are the real deal. I've been drinking it for so long. Quality for AG1 isn't a buzzword. They really push hard. Expert-led scientific research, high-quality ingredients, industry-leading manufacturing, rigorous testing. They got it all. At each step of the process, AG1 is going above and beyond. Now, what I like about them, first of all, you can trust what's in every scoop of AG1 because it's an NSF certified for sport, which is like a rigorous, independent quality. They've tested for over 950 contaminants, banned substances. The industry standard apparently is only testing for 10. Dude, it's 95 times as rigorous. And it's not complicated. It's so simple. It's just replacing health supplements like multivitamins, digestive aids, immune support, and just one simple scoop. It takes 60 seconds. You don't have to swallow a bunch of pills on an empty stomach. Boom. And as I always say, you get a little bit of water in there too. Get that day started. So with the water. And then for me, the prebiotics, probiotics, and digestive enzymes for gut support is probably the most important ingredient. I eat a pretty varied diet, so I get my nutrition from a lot of places. But I got to eat more fermented foods. But AG1 lets me have this prebiotics and probiotics first thing in the morning. Take care of my digestive enzymes, which if you're a listener of the podcast, you know I need help with. All right. Look, I've partnered with AG1 for so long because they make a high-quality product that I genuinely look forward to drinking every day. I chug down an AG1 maybe within 10 minutes of getting out of bed. It's the way I start my day every day, even on the road. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/mighty. That's drinkag1.com/mighty. drinkag1.com/mighty.
We should change the topic.
Yeah, what do you want?
I have a really good idea for, unless you've done this already, being childless in our 40s.
Let's do it. Let's just make it childless 40-year-olds, right? Yeah, let's go.
Is that something you've already done?
No, I mean, they're all weirdly the same topic of just like me saying, yeah, it's like, but yeah, let's talk about being childless in our 40s, because that is a fucking heaven on earth.
Oh my God. Gabriel, and I'm so excited because when you meet another childless couple, like I'm in a very, like my partner and I live together and we are not married. We've lived together for like 3 years. We've been together for 7 years. And we are we're like kind of in the process of getting, it's like a modern engagement, right? So he has I basically designed my own engagement ring myself, because I'm very controlling. I had to make it perfect. I took 10 months designing this thing. Whoa. And then he bought it. It got FedExed. I signed for it. Like it happened to arrive on a day when I was in the house. He's playing Fortnite. I open the door and it's my engagement ring in a box. And I'm like,
the mailman is on one knee.
he's like, oh, sorry, I tripped. And so, so it's in the house somewhere right now. I don't know where it is.
He's hidden it.
My boyfriend's like, you'll never find it.
Check the pocket of a vest he never wears in the closet, because that's where I hid my engagement ring, and Tiff never found it.
I don't want to find it.
I know, it doesn't help. Let me want to borrow my metal detector, and you could really.
I love him threat like that, like vague threat, like of like, you'll never find it. He's so cocky because I know I could find it in moments, you know. But that is where we're at, right, as a couple. And like most of our friends who are couples are engaging in the act of procreation.
Yeah.
And we are like, you know, both of us have felt the same way for a long time. Like we both really like kids and we both feel like we'd probably be pretty good parents if we did it. But we just are so on the fence and leaning towards not having kids that it's like, everybody who I've talked to that has any sense about parenting is like, look, if you're on the fence and you don't maybe think you would want to do it, do not do it. And I'm like, yeah, that makes sense to me. You shouldn't go into something.
I would say that about like ordering mozzarella sticks. You know what I mean? So like if that's not as much of a like a 40-year contract or whatever.
I blocked your pronunciation too of mozzarella. So we only have like one or two other couples in our friend group that are like devoutly childless and just going that. We're not saying we're child free or anything.
Right.
But yeah, it's because it is amazing. Like, and I wake up and I'm like doing stuff.
You wake up when you want.
I wake up at 9 a.m. and I go to like see what I have to do for the day. And then sometimes it occurs to me, I'm like, how on this fucking, on God's green, God's big and blue, would somebody have a child? How? I can't even imagine.
It's crazy. And I have no judgment for people who do. That's important. I get it. It's a huge, difficult thing. It's just, I think I'm a touch too lazy and a touch too selfish for it. And Alice, to give you the history, we've been through the ringer on it too, because I've been with Tiff now for over 21 years. We've been dating since college, been married for 13 years. And we always were like, yeah, we should have kids. She was always a little hesitant. And I was like, yeah, you know, it's crazy. We'll wait. We got to be in like our mid 30s and started doing like IVF stuff, and a very, very difficult process. Mm. After a couple of lost pregnancies and stuff, we went to IVF, and that was a very difficult process. And I'm saying it was absolutely brutal on Tiffany and very difficult for me. So I'm not saying give me sympathy. She deserves it all. And then through this process and like discussing it and talking more and more about it, we realized we were on this, we need a house and a kid tract, just because we didn't know that you could really choose the opposite. You know, like no one in our families ever iterated opposite. And it wasn't until like being, luckily for us, and because Tiffany worked in marketing and I work in theater, we have tons of male couples in our life, like gay guy couples. And the gay guy couples that we're friends with are the old school, like no kids, where, you know, vodka sodas every weekend, like that, those kind of gay couples. And they were really eye opening to us of like, they were like, when we were going through it, they were like, oh, like, we don't have kids, party with us. And we're like, no, we have to, we want. And then as we finally started making these, and every time, and then we finally solidified on, like, you know what? It's not for us. We're not going to do it in, like, 2018, 2019. And then the pandemic happened, and we were like, holy shit, thank holy God shit. We didn't. We live in an 800 square foot apartment. We're trapped here. We're ready to kill each other.
Yeah.
If there was, like, a third person here that needed our constant supervision and help, it would have been a very bad. And I'm not saying the people who went through it did it wrong. Like, you had, like, life, you know, life finds a way. I'm very happy for everyone, but for me, that was very, very much validated a decision we had made. And everything else in our lives have been has been pointing to, like, we made this right choice. You know what I mean? Like, it feels right for us. We have nephews and nieces from, we both have two younger brothers who have kids. So, like, we get to be aunts and uncles, which is
the best.
So much better than being a parent, I feel
the
like.
The best, dude. That is one thing that
it's like having a roommate with a dog, you know? Like, where you're like, you don't have to you don't have to take it to the fucking vet or walk it every day.
But
if you're around, you get to play with it.
I have really close friends that I grew up with that have kids. My best friend who I grew up with lives in Minnesota, and she's got a kid. And I'm very close with her and her kid, obviously, but they live in Minnesota. And that, so I don't see them enough to be like, I mean, I'm the aunt, but, like, I don't see them enough. And no one here, like Garrett, my boyfriend, he's from LA. His sister lives here, but she's younger. And we don't know if she's going to have kids either. And I don't have any siblings. So I, like, that's the one thing is I'm like, now we want to be the babysitting couple, but we haven't, like, gotten in with anyone yet, you know what I mean?
And it'll turn up.
Every parent I talk to is like, just come over.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, why can't I be the babysitting? And they're like, I don't know. What? Like, they're so tired. They can't even think about it. So.
Yeah, I don't do good on not a lot of sleep. I travel a lot for work. I like to be out and about all day long, you know, without. My wife and I are wildly independent people. Like, you know,
same.
We just do separate things all the time. And it would be like, it would just be too much for us. And we don't have, you know, we're both artists in our early 40s living in, like, a rented tiny apartment. Like, we don't have the space. And I'm calling myself an artist as a podcaster. She's a floral artist. So maybe.
As you should.
So, like, I couldn't even, like, really financially handle, like, I would have to change my career
everything.
Or lifestyle. And that's not two things I want to do. And I don't want to resent, like, a fucking 7 pound, 11 ounce being for the rest of my life, because now I can't be a fucking surfer and Spanish classes and doing improv 4 nights a week because
And, you know, you wouldn't probably resent in the way that you think, but that's the thing. It's like, you know, it's all hypotheticals. And you know what? If people with kids want to listen to me go on and on about my choices and judge me, then they should. Because it's like, look, you got to do whatever you can do to make yourself a better parent and you happier. And if it includes judging me, I welcome you. I welcome your hatred. I like it.
Please.
Whatever.
I don't.
You need,
I say bring it on, and not in, like, a weird, intense way. Just, like, truly enjoy.
No, just however I can contribute. And if I'm the person you want to hate about it, then contribute that way. But it's just, it's been for me a journey of, like, I love my childhood, and I love the idea of, like, having that kind of influence on a child. But when I was, like, parenting, I love the idea of parenting somebody and helping them grow. But my experience, I realized, this is the kind of my realization, was I look back at my childhood, and my mom was 20 when she had me, and my dad was a drunk. And so partial to the, they split custody when they split up, which was immediate. And so my dad was partying all the time. And so he would leave me with people all the time. And my mom was getting her master's degree, and she's 20 years old when she had me, and then, like, needed a lot of help with her life. And so I was always with other people. So my whole childhood was like this, it was kind of a party of, like, people, you know, babysitters and aunts and uncles. And for a while, my mom lived with this gay guy who was, like, my de facto live-in dad for a while. Like, and it was, like, the best, like, I look back on that as being, like, the greatest gift possible is like having this many different people involved in raising me.
Right.
You know,
it
was
takes a village to raise Alice.
It was the closest thing you have to a village. And I do believe I was a nightmare. So not many people could handle me that much. But like so I think about that and I think about the fact that like, oh, it's not to like be able to influence and have an impact on somebody and create a space for the next generation to like learn things and feel good and be happy. Like you don't have to parent, basically.
No.
You don't have to you don't have to procreate. You don't have to make a person to be able to do that.
And our generation has like a different approach to like friendship versus family too, where it's like, I feel like my parents' generation was like, they kept in touch with all of their cousins. Me, on the other hand, is like, yeah. I have like fiercely loyal people that I met from being on a Harold team together that their kids all know who I am, you know, like call me Uncle Gabrus, you know?
Yeah.
And like that's like our generation, our culture, whatever you want to call it, like that friend, like you get that feeling of family now more so than from my own family, like my own nuclear family growing up. I like much like you, my mom had me when she was 20. My dad was an alcoholic, but they stayed together and worked nights and weekends. And I was like a latchkey kid from like 11 on with two younger brothers. And so we didn't, you know, grandparents would babysit us. Weird babysitters would babysit us. I would do like a lion's share of the babysitting. And so like I just think about like, not to shift gears too much, but like my brother, he has two kids, my nephews. One of them is my godson. Love these kids. I'll be like, what are you up to this weekend? He's like, football game, then baseball game, then basketball game. Then we're going to the fire truck museum. And then we have to drop the kids off at a birthday party. And in that 90 minutes, my sister-in-law, my wife and I will have like a drink together and hang out and catch up and then go immediately then back to house to feed them, to put them to bed, to give them. And I'm like, whoo, I like get overwhelmed when my schedule is like, I have to tape an audition and record a podcast today. I might as well quit the industry.
Yeah, fuck.
No, I'm like, the gym ain't happening. I'm not going to get any reading done. I'm not going to do any of my self-care. I have two things to do today.
Well, also, fuck the industry for making us tape, for making us make short films for them. Their little, your face.
I'm sorry. It pisses me off so much. I'm already not good at auditioning. I'll tell you what I'm worse at. File management and fucking uploading and Dropbox and all this shit that I've had to learn.
I pay money. I go to one of these taping places and I just give them money to do it. So I'm paying for my own.
Wait, that sounds like in my wheelhouse of something that I might like.
Intrepid Tapes. Just go there. Just you pay. It gets it done. As long as you're more or less knowing what you're doing, 15 minutes in and out, and it's like $20. It's amazing.
And they just like send you the files and you forward
they
them
send
to your
them the files. You give them the email where you want the thing to go and go, thank you and say goodbye. And then you email your agents and be like, should be coming to you.
I might have to get down with that because I
like, instantly have a kid.
Now I can have a now I can finally start doing direct deposits.
You're like, thank God you start crying. You're like, I can have my boy.
Now that I have my auditions taped, I can finally stop pulling out the dream.
Tip for raw dogging it.
It's cream pie city, sweetheart. Get pumped. Disgusting.
That's not how you have a kid. Cream pies.
Hey, I went to a biologist. He said, this is how you have kids. Cream pies equals children.
The best kind of kids come through the cream pies.
The strongest, most...
the best you get is through a Boston Steamer cream pie combo. And
are
then
you
get a real nice...
Are you familiar? No, just the idea of someone doing the taping for... Because I can't even like look at video of myself. I can't try hard. And then... Childless or not, a divorce can happen from having your partner help you self-tape. Like, we have been on the verge of some of our biggest relationship drama from just trying to self-tape together. Because it's hard. It's a full change of the power dynamic. It's already such an anxious, open, and raw situation. Now you're doing it for your partner.
It's so true.
And it's like, you don't want to, like, bother them. But, like, you also, you're thankful for the help, but you're also like, oh, I'm okay. Like, you know, it's like, it's too complex of a situation. And also, you're wasting their fucking time. Like, my poor fucking wife has taped like 100 auditions and I've booked 0 of them. Like, it's fucking crazy.
Like, from her perspective, she's like,
yeah, she's like, welcome aboard the Titanic, hun. Like, thank you for helping me self-tape. None of these have ever fucking worked out. And I will say, it's given her some sympathy. Like, it's given her like a better understanding where she's like, so you just never heard anything back about that audition that we like worked hard and you really liked it. I was like, oh yeah, the only feedback I got was my agent's assistant replying, got it. And then never heard from them again. And like, yes, I wanted the job. Yeah. Yes. Yes. I have friends that work on the show that I auditioned for. And no, I have not heard a thing from anyone feedback whatsoever. For all I know, it's like they're just clicking and dragging it into a recycling bin somewhere on a desktop somewhere. And I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, I just worked on that all day. And I would like, it would change my life. I would get health insurance if I got this job. And instead it's just like, no word whatsoever.
They did crack down on that a little bit, which was one of the reasons we were striking. It was just like, clearly studios were like telling casting offices like, well, now that you don't have to have an office that we pay for, how about also we just get as many as we can, and just putting the burden on the actors. And they're like, oh, this is a great way to screw over actors. It's like they really wanted to screw over actors.
They're like, look, we reached out to 600 people to do this under 5 guest star on Abbott Elementary. And it's like, and it went to one of the writer producers.
Exactly.
Like, oh, okay, cool.
And you were finding out you were auditioning for like Denzel Washington's grandfather or something.
Right.
You know, so it's like, well, like, you know, because they just were like, they'll just do cattle call for everything. And so they're cracking down on that because it's like, okay, you can't call everyone for everything for every audition anymore.
Right. Because just because it's all hard drive space, it's not even like they have to book the appointments.
Exactly.
They don't have to like, and then on top of that, it's also like, now you see it in the email sometimes, there's no need to have these lines memorized. I'm like, oh, great. So I don't have to memorize the 14 pages of sides you sent me, 3 scenes for a sitcom, and I still don't hear back. It's like,
they changed
it
to 8.
Let me read 1. Yeah, yeah.
They cut it down to 8 because they were doing that too. People listening to this podcast, they were making us memorize 14 pages of dialogue, create a short film of us reading. It's like, so crazy. And so now they changed it so they only 8. And I just got one that was like 8. They really crammed those 8.
Oh, dude, like, they like will like cut and paste so that it's like like they can't go over 8, but they'll make sure it's like there's no FYI section
and
or
then
anything
like
things
that. Things like, oh, you don't have to be off book. They have to put that in the email. But it's like, clearly, if you're off book, they're going to pay more attention to your audition. You know what I mean?
Then like, if you're holding sides in your hand. I know. I honestly like want to tell my reps when it comes in, I'm like, why? Like, why should I do this? Like, it's never like any other like animal would learn that, hey, every time I touch the button for cheese doesn't come out. Do you think I should just stop pushing the fucking button for cheese? And their agents are like, well, what if this is the big cheese you get this time? And you're like, you're right. I could maybe get the big cheese this time.
Agents are the mice that would just be like thrown out the back. Like, yeah. Something's wrong with these mice.
And then the cheese finally comes and you've pushed the button 10,000 times. And then agents, managers, and everyone lines up. It's like, like a little slice of that cheese, please. It's like, wait, I did everything. I did it all.
I don't know if you've ever had this. Another thing that happens in Hollywood that is insane is that you'll get, so I got signed by WME, and this happened like right when I got signed with them when I was in Mike and Dave. And like I had like 15 people on my team. They all took me out to dinner. And they were, and somebody turned to me, one of them turned to me and they were like, are you ready? And I was like, for what? And they were like,
dessert.
Your life to change. Like, and I was like, oh, okay, I guess so. And like nothing, I didn't get a single audition. Like it was, so, it's so crazy the way that they fuck with you. It's like any other job, it would just be like, this is abusive, but it's just par for the course.
Yeah, and then it's like hard to complain about because it is like not physically difficult.
Oh, you're living your dream?
Yeah, and it's like, no, my dream, believe it or not, is not to self-tape for shows and movies that I think are bad, but I desperately have to because I need health insurance and maybe booking one of these will lead to me booking something I'm interested in. Yeah, that is the fucking dream. That is not what I put on my fucking like kid, like my fucking vision board when I was a
firefighter,
child.
You know what I mean? Like fucking A. Yeah, I just lost a really, 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 a really hard audition that, I mean, it was a really hard part to lose. And it was crazy because like I worked on it for 2 years, basically, like trying to get myself in the room for this project that I wanted so badly. And they, you know, there was all these like emails ahead of time. Like I got the audition in, they were like immediately email, do you have a passport? Which is like, you get that email and you're like, oh, and then I was like, oh, I got a passport. Yeah, I do. Oh, they're going to hire me. And then 7 days go by and I'm like, oh. And then I hear the like, oh, it's a tricky part. They're still looking. And I was like,
the frequency in which I'm just watching something and I'm like, Oh, so it went to Josh Gad, or, that's who got it, because no one told me, no one ever mentioned anything that happened, and now the show is just out, or the movie's just on, and I'm like, oh, I auditioned for a part in this.
To my agent's credit in this circumstance, and I'm no longer with WME, by the way, they called me, and normally when they call you, for listeners, if an agent calls you, it's like, you got it. They call you when you get it.
Right.
And
when the assistant's like, we've got three or more people on the line for you, is always a good sign. Yeah. I haven't gotten one of those in a while.
No, I know. I haven't gotten one of those in nigh on 7 years. So I got the call and I was like, oh my God. And then it was a call to tell me I didn't get it, which is new. And I appreciated it because the person I was working with, they were like aware of how hard I worked and how much I wanted this thing. Right. And so it was kind of nice that she called and was like, look, like, I know what you did for this, right? And so it's like, all right, so that is changing a little bit, like feeling that people are like recognizing your humanity a little bit. Like, I think it happens with younger employees of these agencies that are kind of like, no, like, we don't think it's cool to like, maybe millennials, you know, who have been in our position in one way or another are like, yeah, maybe it's not cool to just like treat people like they're not people. Like,
yeah, maybe you know, we can like for maybe 40 seconds effort, we just give them a ring and say, bummer, Gabrus, I know you wanted this one. Yeah. An email even would be great.
Would be so nice. So,
and I'm like, if you want 10% of my salary, can you at least put in 5% of the effort I'm putting in? And I will pay you double for 5% of effort.
Yeah. Is there a premium package I can subscribe to?
I'm like, I'll pay you 11% if you promise to like respond to me. Like, what do you want? Like,
yeah. I was so disappointed about this part, but I realized when I was being disappointed and I was like devastated for a week, I was like, oh, I should be more, this shouldn't hit me so hard because I should have opportunities to be disappointed more often. Like, I'm not auditioning enough to be disappointed enough.
Well, I don't get my hopes up anymore. If I'm being 100% honest, and this is like depressing and whole, this is like a conversation for Lawrence, my therapist. I
put my glasses on.
I don't even. Yeah, thank you, Alice. Oh, by the way, my therapist is a character Alice plays, who has a, I guess, not a pencil thin mustache, but a pencil for a mustache.
I'm here.
Thank you.
Now, talk more about that.
I don't even get my hopes up anymore, so I'm not even let down. I remember when I was younger, I'm a gambler. When I was younger, a scratch off, every time I sat down to do a scratch off, I was like, what if this is the one where I get 50 grand and I'm fucking 19 years old and my whole life is different?
Yeah.
And now I still enjoy scratch offs, but it is like, give me, okay, nothing like I thought. Nothing. Oh, cool. Yeah. 20. Great. Awesome. I'm not expecting anything. That's how I feel about the entertainment. And I'm at the point where I'm like, I used to be like, ooh, this would be, now I'm like, this doesn't even matter. Just throw this into the fucking void that is that is the hard drive of Allison Jones and just send this along and get no feedback whatsoever or whatever. You know,
like, I've never gotten anything from Allison Jones ever before. And I realize, like, you have to know, like, the casting, like, I've learned through the strike and a little bit before that, the casting people don't get to say, like, they're like, especially in the before times, like, they're fans of you. If you go into a casting director's office a lot, it's because they love you and they want to put you in something. It's the producers and the people above the producers that are saying no and putting their nephew in it or whatever. And the casting directors are super annoyed by that. Like, they're like, okay, well, we do your job, you know? So it's like, I have a better outlook on them, at least at this point. Like, I thought, like, they hated me and they were torturing me by bringing me in over and over again. I was like, why are you? I just want to say, like, you know, for the listeners, like, this is the thing, like, you gotta, and to you, like, you have to constantly be reassessing whether or not it's worth it to you in this job, I think more than other jobs, because it's so personal and yeah. So hurtful. The way that you're treated as like an artist, I don't know if any other industry that's this personal and this brutal.
Right. Cause like someone looks at again. A picture of you and says, no, thanks. You know what I mean? Or like watches a video of you and says,
yeah.
It's not like, here's my idea for the insulin campaign. No, this is me pretending to be a janitor and you don't like me. Got
it. With this recent thing I went out for, it was like, I felt so close to the material and so involved in the project and so passionate about it. And I had been in contact with the producers and other actors and everything. And I was just like, it was like, I put my heart out there and I was like, this is to you. I want to tell you, this is all of me. You can have all of me. And I know that there's a lot of choices out there, but today I want you to know that I'm here fully. And they're like, we're going a different direction. Like in the middle of your
okay, well, thank you. We love to hear
it. In the rain speech or whatever. It's like, oh, we're going a different direction. Like, oh my God, this is so crazy.
No way. You guys found a different teenage Kraken? That'd be funny. This like whole thing you're pouring your life into is like, and now I can't be the voice of the chicken nugget in the McDonald's commercials.
It's a commercial movie. It's so great. It was just like, they're letting Flo have a sister.
They're finally letting her have a family. She's been begging for years.
I'm so lonely.
It's funny you say that. I've in the last year have gotten to a healthy point with auditions where I'm like,
yeah,
this isn't my route of success in the industry. And that's fine. Will I constantly, like, will I keep, why am I going to not self-tape for this? I have the time. Do I prioritize it? Do I stress over it anymore? Do I arguably not try hard enough to even maybe ever get booked? Yes. But I've gotten to a point where it doesn't kill me anymore. Mm-hmm. And like, that's enough. Like, is that I'm not absolutely distraught by the premise of this fucking industry.
I try to find something in each thing. And like, I will audition for stuff I don't like, but I try to find something in each thing that's like, this is something I could do with this. Like, I think of it as like that show Chopped, where they give you a bunch of weird ingredients.
Yeah, and you just got to,
like,
make
well,
it work.
Look, it's not going to be the best dinner you ever had, but like, you know, there'll be something in there that you're like, I could eat that again.
Yeah, I could put octopus on PBJ and we'll sort it out from there.
It's fish and cheese, never. But I'll try, you know, I'll always find something with it. And I actually really like auditioning and I liked going in. Like, I liked that part of it. Like, I thought that was a fun thing.
I was definitely better at that because it was like flirting adjacent, which is
flirting
a strong,
adjacent.
Which is like a stronger suit of mine than fucking home video recording.
Yeah, we're a couple of whores.
Yeah, I'm charming AF. I'm arguably not talented at all. I'm just fun to be around. So if I don't get to be fun, or if I'm not around you, I never get to demonstrate that.
That's a really good point. I don't think that's true necessarily. I think you're comedically far and away talented. But yeah, that is a huge thing. Like, we don't get that opportunity again. So it's like, what do you drive to?
And the jobs aren't the jobs aren't jackpots anymore like they used to be also. So that kind of frees you up a little bit, yeah, too, where it's like, I'm not going up for a pilot anymore. That could be foreseeably, yeah, be, oh, this could be the next 7 years of my life and I could buy a, yeah, house and a fucking boat. It's like none of them are that anymore. It's like, that's going to, yeah, just go to Paul Giamatti. So why stress? So like,
exactly,
like losing that of whole, like my whole life could change. It's like, no, if you need to make it in Hollywood now, like if you're not already a millionaire or your parents were, you have to have like 200 W-9s a year. Like you have, yes, to like yeah. I have two podcasts. I tour, I fucking act, I write, I do like a million things to make like a teacher's salary.
Like, you know, yes, like, make like a teacher's salary. Exactly. Yeah. People don't realize that. And that's including the fact that teachers don't make enough money.
Yes. Right.
You know, like I should be making less than a teacher.
Agreed.
The way the system works. Like I know what I do is less worthwhile than that. So they should be making twice what I make. I get it.
Raise teachers and nurses paychecks. And not just because that's my entire family's jobs, but for real, raise those paychecks. And yeah, book me while we're fixing society. Book me on a,
yeah,
How hard is it? I could pass a fucking hot dog to Spider-Man, for Christ's sake.
It's so crazy because it's like you watch the content is thick. There's so much TV. You'll be like, you know, I'll be at like a party, or like I'll be like scrolling on Instagram and I'll be like, oh, I didn't know that person was on that show on that network. Three things I've never heard of before. Like,
right.
Oh my God, did he really book that show? The Trouble with Tribbles on Funball? Like, what are any of these? You'll drive around and you'll see these
something things, you like, didn't know existed moments ago, you now are envious of. You know, yeah, what I mean? Like, I was like, I didn't even know about this job, but like, I could have had it. Like,
you're
no,
like, oh, well, I'm going into season three of Bulldog Hotel. And you're like, well, what's that on? And it's like, it's on OBS Prime. Like, you're like, what the fuck is... And so you're just like, you know that they're out there. And that's the reason you find you're envious, because you're like, well, there's so many fucking shows. Like, how are they making this many? And I'm not a part of any of it. Like, it's so crazy.
And to tie it back into our topic, if I had a kid, the extra, yeah, anxiety I would feel around all this, the finances of it all, like, that would,
yeah,
stress me. I mean, my friends with kids who are actors, half of them have gotten like weird ass day jobs in the last like 5 years.
Totally.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're just like, I do front desk at the yoga place because I make a little extra money. I get free yoga and like it, you know, and I'm like, okay, like let it rip, man. But that's, yeah, what it fucking takes to make it now.
Yes. And that is a new thing. And I think that's what I was happy. The other thing about the start, I was like, I was psyched that people generally, because I always like, you know, the thing about movies and TV is that like it's magic and you get to like watch it and be entertained by it. So like people shouldn't have to know the nitty gritty of everything. But it's gotten to the point where it's this puppy mill thing and it's like people should kind of know.
We should kind of alert them to what's in their cereal. You know, like let's talk a little bit about, yeah, Yellow Number 5.
Because it's mostly
today.
Shrimp at this,
yeah,
point.
Yeah, take it from me, baby. Shrimp tails du jour. Well, the thing I liked about the strike, one thing that came about in the strike a little bit,
caused it.
The reason I crossed the picket line was the strike. They were like, you know, there was those quotes like, well, wait till they lose their homes, then they'll be come crawling back or whatever. It's like, no, you don't understand. You broke the industry so long ago that every single person on the picket line has a podcast and two other ways that they make money. Because the industry sucks so much. No one's, yeah, living off of just their sitcom. I mean, Ryan Reynolds is Deadpool and is insanely successful. And if he couldn't act, he could just sit on his gin money every night. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
these guys have, everyone has side hustles because, yeah, the industry sucks. And maybe some of these side hustles are because they're already millionaires, want to be billionaires. But like the amount of TV writers I know who are like, previously you would get 2 gigs a year and that would cover you for a year. Now I have to get 9 to make it. But luckily I also record this podcast to like bridge me financially and creatively in between jobs and shit. And it's like,
yeah,
yeah, we had to create this survival system and now we're going to use it to our advantage to be out on the fucking picket, yes, lines, pickup line. Well, for me, it was pickup lines because I fucked a lot.
Oh, you, I fuck a lot. I fuck a lot. You know what? I like to fuck.
Me? I love fucking in front of Paramount.
You can cut down those trees because my butthole has sunscreen on it. So
yeah, I don't give a fuck. Yes, and my asshole is out.
So that was also, they were like, oh, they're gonna lose your homes, and you're like, I never have one. Nobody has homes. Like, no one is. And there's nothing to lose.
Hey, Zaslav, don't take this the wrong way, but I'm 42 and still renting, bitch.
What's
I'm
up?
In the same apartment I moved into when I was 30 when I moved to LA, dog. Yeah, that's what's right. Up, I'm bitch? Unable to even leave this setup.
Things are working out in the sense that they're not. I can't leave. I know a guy who was on Orange is the New Black, like the Benton hit Netflix series that put Netflix on the map besides like House of Cards. And he was on that. And then he was on a network TV show that was killer. Like, it was one of the most successful network TV shows. And he lost his health insurance. Like, that is the state of things. Like, people,
I lost my health insurance post strike as well. And I had to fucking, like,
I will probably lose it for a lapse in between if we don't get picked up, I'll lose it. But Resident Alien crazy. Films so infrequently because of COVID and then the strike and also just the way TV works now.
Yeah.
That, yeah, I could lose it any minute.
I know. And everyone's got so many jobs. You have to have so many jobs. And then you see like, oh man, Nick Kroll also is doing this. Come on, man. Like,
but it's, yeah. Yeah.
But you don't blame them because it could all go away in any minute.
Yeah, and I thought I like the solidarity of like other people because there's like a lot of shame and like, oh, I have to drive Uber or whatever, and it's like there isn't, like there's not, there shouldn't be shame in that. And the fact that the strike made it kind of clear that like, oh, we're all in this boat, we're all talented people that deserve the what we've worked for, you know. It's not like we're like, you know, oh, this pipe dream that we never thought we should have. It's like, no, like, I don't know anyone in my friend circle of people that are working writers and actors who's like, doesn't deserve a job. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know anybody.
If I didn't have a Patreon, my wife got laid off in the pandemic. We would have gone home. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if I didn't have a Patreon, I would be out of the industry. I'd be like trying to figure out how to get back in right now.
Fuck,
like,
dude.
That's crazy. Or I would be taking out a loan to like rent my apartment longer and hope that I book a fucking regional commercial or I hope that After Midnight has me on twice a week for a 10 months or whatever.
Yeah, could I camp outside Ocean Park?
Yeah, please.
And just like reopen Ocean Park.
Are you sure you don't want to go fat and bearded with this role? That's just me to every casting. You sure that what about fat bearded guy? A fat bearded guy can eat at a McDonald's, right? You promise? Like, that might be so sad.
You promise?
You promise? I eat McDonald's. I'll do it on camera for money.
What are they promising?
You promise
me.
What
are they
promising? Please promise.
Like, are we promising you that you can eat at McDonald's?
I'm hungry.
Well, yeah, I guess so. You know, it's, sure, we promise that.
This will be old news by the time this episode comes out, but there was this like quote from Seth Rogen where he said like, on the weekends we like to lay around naked smoking weed and that's why we won't have kids or whatever. And everyone, like all the like tradition, even people with kids are not backlashing against that, but like the weird traditionalists on the right or all the people who are like, no, you should need to raise a child, like and everyone's coming for him. I'm like, can you pick somebody else whose maybe life isn't absolutely fucking perfect? The dude is like, it's like, you're going to be hard pressed to convince me that Seth Rogen has made bad choices his whole life. Like, I'm sorry. Dude, like, makes pottery, makes funny movies, hires tons of people, keeps a bunch of people in work, raises money for Alzheimer's, has a lovely wife, has a pot company. Like, he's got it all fucking figured out. You can't tell me. I'm like, yeah, you're right, asshole. Have kids, you lazy stoner.
Fuck you. It's really like, it's giving, it's like when those guys, like when guys on the internet are be like incels or whatever, they'll always, one of the main refrains they come at me with is like, you have, get another cat, feminist. Like, you're going to die alone with your cats. And you're like, ugh. So So you mean like literal heaven? Like that's exactly what I want. Like,
and I, take it from me.
Cat?
My dad had three kids. He still died. like we were there in hospice, but we couldn't help. We didn't like, you know what I mean? Like we didn't financially help my mom. We didn't help physically help him. Like being a parent is not mean that your end of life is better by any means.
Being left alone with my cats, you could not describe a better end. Like to me at all. I was just like, whenever my boyfriend leaves the house, I'm like, wait, did he come back? Is he in the background going like, oh.
She wants me to leave again.
He knows. He's like, I'm going to be around today, so I'm going to bother you a lot. But we're just.
After lockdown, I've really learned to enjoy my alone time when you like went like a couple years without any alone time, like without you've like kind of forced your.
Gotta keep this in.
All right, so for the listeners, Alice's partner is home on the other side of the sheet that she must have on her backdrop.
I'm rich.
And didn't know and was talking about like being left alone with the cats is a dream or whatever. And now for the last 2 minutes, she's been silently laughing and mouthing, oh my God, he's here. Oh my God, he's here.
Babe. Are you here? Are you here?
Are you here?
Do you have your headphones in?
It's a funny question.
Did you hear what I said? You didn't? Okay, I'll tell you later. You can come say hi. We're talking about being a childless couple.
Now you're guilted into asking him. Like,
actually, we went to see your improv show with the one at the Lyric.
Oh, with Ben and Dom.
He hasn't been able to go. I don't think to the Spanish, the Cool Gato one. Is it usually Sunday nights?
Yeah,
my boyfriend's a jazz musician. So
ooh, Sundays is a busy for jazz. That's busy really jazz. That's jazz night.
It's jazz night. Look, it's jazz night. So he hasn't been able to go to that one, but we did go to see that. And I remember he said how funny you were.
Oh, so, well.
He's a fan. He's a fan. Right. He loves you.
Thank fucking God. Big fan. Thank fucking God.
He was like, God, fucking Dom. He loved Dom. He thought Dom was so funny. But he knows Ben and he's met him before. And he's like, Ben. I was like, Ben, a break.
Leave Ben out of this.
Like, I think because he knows him, it was like he had really high expectations.
Right. Yeah. And it's like, oh, these other two goobers with him. Oh, those guys surprised me.
Almost like parental. He's like, well, you get in that scene, Ben.
I had no preconceived notions about these other guys.
But yeah, anyway, so he's home. Anyway, be left alone with cats. The best.
Being left alone is a dream. Being childless means you get some more chances of being alone. The one thing that we are actively always try to do is like, you know, if we had a child, we would try to instill some sense of good and like helping other people in them. So one thing when we decided we weren't going to have kids, we did say like, we got to like do something that helps the world a little bit. And we haven't gotten to that yet, but we are, we're still looking for something that like, we're thinking about maybe starting to recycle. Imagine living in LA for 10 years and I haven't recycled at all.
Not once. Taking bottles out of the blue bin and putting them in the trash. So I think like I really want, at least for him, I want him to work with kids because like he is like, I would like, that's the other thing, like seeing your partner with kids, like it's great to see. To me anyway, like it's very sexy for a woman to see their, I guess, male partner be like good with kids. You know what I mean? Like even if I'm not the mother, like, so, and I know he would be really great with kids and he loves kids. So I want him to like work with kids in some way, you know, and I don't want to have to. So it's for him to do, and I'll just walk dogs.
That sounds fun as hell.
I'll just walk dogs or whatever. And he'll, you know, no, but he's been talking about wanting to do some sort of like music lessons or something like that. Cause
oh, hell yeah. Great. Jazz for kids. Kid jazz.
Dude, you got to get him in jazzing early.
Jazzing juniors. We got junior jazz over here.
The earlier you get them into jazz,
the stronger they become as.
So it's good for their bone density, I hear. Yeah.
Wetterland, this has been a true fucking pleasure, dog. It's always been fun to see you and catch up, my dog. And now look at us here, fully catching up. What would you like to plug? I believe this episode comes out right after or right before the finale of Resident Alien. This will come out on April 4th.
Okay, so that would be
after.
So April 4th. The finale is on the 3rd, so I guess
you probably have it DVR'd because, you know.
Have it DVR'd.
Yeah, you've already DVR'd it.
Oh, okay, so
maybe you watched it last night live because you're a diehard fan.
How about this? Maybe you haven't heard of the show before.
It's possible with so much content out there.
Still time to check it out. It's on Sci-Fi. But you could also do that. You could also sign up for Peacock because it's on Peacock and the newer seasons are on Peacock. You could also go to my website and I stream on Twitch twice a week.
Oh, nice. That'll be in the show notes. What is that? What is your website? So,
it's crazy. It's I shouldn't have named it this, but it's ihavetogetawayfromhim.com.
Yeah, and a lot of people have reached out to me thinking that it's a cry for help, but really it's just how much I like cats.
AliceWetterland.com has all the info that you need, including tour dates, they few and far between, but they're there.
So go to AliceWetterland.com, watch Resident Alien, catch up on all the old seasons. You got Peacock listeners, fucking watch it there. And if not, pay for it and watch it there.
Pay for it,
motherfucker. Or you know what? Rent the series. Pay for the series separately and let it rip.
Or
you know?
Just like pirate it. That's good. I think they watch the numbers there too.
Yeah, that's good. I think residuals count towards piracy, so definitely
it's
pirate.
The only way we get residuals.
We have to like strike. We have to protest to get like piracy residuals up.
Yeah. Or you just get a white hat hacker to somehow.
Finally, a white hat. Ah. As for me, shitheads, you know, all my plugs, my other podcast, Action Boys at actionboys.biz. We have some free episodes at free.actionboys.biz and 101 Places to Party Before You Die, the travel show I co-host with Adam Pally, still on HBO Max. Hopefully we're recording this in advance. God only knows. Hey, maybe the internet is down finally and we can all look each other in the eyes and enjoy each other's company. Sounds brutal. Getting a thumbs down from Alice as I try to look in her eyes. She closed her eyes and just put her thumbs down.
No, thank you.
Not right here.
Soundboard popping off. Obviously not hooked up to this record at all, but just for the cheap seats with cheap sheets on them. Behind you, you got
with
cheap sheep.
Cheap sheep, and they're like, I can't afford it.
I'm broke. Bye, shitheads.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.
In a part of the world where there are no rules.
Holy shit.
Holy shit, guys. Holy I'm so pumped.
I definitely have not watched this since I rented it on VHS in 92.
Strangers united by the threat of death.
We got all the fucking major players. Seagal.
Vladimir Putin is a good man.
Arnold. Here, come. Give it to me.
I need you to cream pie me now.
Stallone.
People are loving this movie.
It's got a lot of heart.
You're mentally irregular.
Now. Somewhere, somehow, someone's gonna pay.
I would fucking love for my wife to like see me rip a guy's throat out.
But they didn't count on one thing.
This movie's fucking insane.
It's how you know it's a good movie. You have to do almost all the work yourself to figure it out.
Oh, there's a fantasy component. Yeah. There's some sword fighting.
There's some lightning.
bam, 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 bam.
There's a new game in town.
You wake up after a few years, and then you don't even know who you are anymore.
We're going to be making Terminators. We're going to make a really great deal with the Xenomorphs.
What? I don't hate them, but I've been in a room with
them. Yes, I understand.
This is now the 20th ending of the movie.
I'm Dar.
I'm your dad.
Action, boys. Boys will be boys.
Subscribe here for bonus content and more free stuff from behind the paywall. To get new episodes, become a patron at actionboys.biz.
Do it! Do it! Come on! Do it now!